You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
The stage is set. The destination, New York City. The field of battle, Rockin' Riley's Pub. The grand prize, fantasy baseball glory. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network's coverage of Tout Wars continues now.
Welcome back to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. This is the Roto Experts in the Morning. It's Mike, Matt, George. And we have with us today Paul Spohr. He's going to be competing in the NL, in the AL only Tout Wars draft at 9 o'clock here on Rockin' Riley's. Paul, it's good to see you.
Good morning. I was actually in the Tout Wars mixed head-to-head last night.
Got it. Tout Wars mixed head-to-head last night. You competing in anything else today or throughout the weekend?
Okay. Just helping with the AL board
today.
Okay,
good, good. So, and how do you feel it went for you last night?
It was interesting. It was.
I'm seeing you're getting props on your pitching staff, so something must have gone well.
So I took a very, very unorthodox approach, and I just stacked offense. I ended up getting Trout, Harper, Votto, and Arenado.
Wow.
All for $40 or more. It was 41 for Votto, 41 for Arenado, 44 for Harper, and 50 for Trout.
Wow.
So that left me with not much money for the rest of the staff, or for the rest of the team, but it's a head-to-head league, and it uses K9 instead of volume strikeouts. And it has, those elements made this possible because I felt I could kind of punt pitching a little bit and mix and match every week. I got a bunch of starters that I ended up liking. They shouldn't have let me get Francisco Liriano for a dollar, Dylan Bundy for a dollar, Ian Kennedy for a dollar. I think these are guys, because you do have to meet an innings minimum, so I couldn't just go middle relievers.
Sure.
And so I just stacked offense, and it wasn't the plan. You know, once I bought Trout and Harper, I said, pedal to the metal and might as well keep buying superstars. I even bought Trevor Story for 25 as well.
Wow.
I was surprised Story only went for 25.
I think because it's OBP, maybe people are scared off.
That's right, it's OBP league as well.
I don't know if you guys notice this if you play in OBP leagues, but I feel like the OBP gets paid way too much attention.
I completely agree.
People freak out, unlike they ever do about batting average. And like, you know, when you're in a batting average league, yeah, you want to take care of it. You want to get a Votto or D. Gordon or Ichiro at his prime or whatever. But you don't freak out and say, well, I can never draft Mark Trumbo or anything like that. But then the second people get an OBP, they don't want to mess with anybody who doesn't have a good OBP.
Yeah.
I mean, I got Joey Votto. So I could take pretty much anybody after that. And then when you talk about Votto, Harper, and Trout, then I could literally, I could take somebody with a 280 OBP.
Sure.
Yeah, Trout and Joey Votto, the gods of OBP, is just like, you know, game over right there.
Yeah. I think it's a great point. I think it's a great point to make, though. When you go into leagues where the strategy is perhaps different from our traditional 5x5s, you have to make sure that you are keeping it in mind, because most of the other categories are still the same. There's just one category change, so you don't want to overload because you feel like you have to win OBP category, right?
Exactly. And you're not going to lose OBP with one guy who has a 310, you know, so Mark Trumbo or whatever, and plus what he gives you with the power probably makes up for it. It's just a balancing act, but I've noticed that OBP gets paid way more attention than average ever does.
Do you feel the same way about the K per nine?
Well, that definitely is an element that people really pay attention to. A lot of relievers go, if you see the draft board, you're going to see a lot of middle relievers, and you're like wondering why. That's 100% why, because the K9 does change it. Now, you can't go all relievers because you have to meet an innings minimum. I believe it's 950 in the season. So it does change the strategy a little bit. We definitely have more relievers go than most leagues, and it mitigates some of the savesness of relievers, because I can take a Brad Brock with his 10-plus strikeouts per nine, and he has value there. So that changes it too.
Yeah, Scott Angle, Corey Parsons in Tout. If you didn't know that, he's in Tout, and he was in an OPP league as well. And that's all they talked about. And I'm right on board with you. It's the same as average as far as a category. You can take one bad guy and not have to panic about it. But they were like, oh no, we can't take anybody who's less than three. They said 310. I think it's 320.
Once you start getting in the low 300s, people freak out. And like I get it. It's something you have to build around, but the superstars that you get, the Miguel Cabreras, Vados, you know, all those studs, they should counterbalance
it. They'll offset it.
It's just a balancing act.
Well, I think you getting Francisco Liriano for a buck and like Ian Kennedy for a buck, those two guys right there, and pairing them with Dylan Bundy, who I'm very excited for as well this season, see what he can do with the cutter being implemented. But Liriano getting reunited with Russell Martin, Ian Kennedy's still in Kauffman Stadium, which really helps him suppress the home runs, and he's pretty much close to a 200 strikeout guy every year.
Yeah, I think getting them for volume of innings, again, I got to meet that innings minimum. They're guys that I'm going to play regularly, I think. I'm not that worried about Francisco Liriano in Toronto. I understand that it's much worse than Pittsburgh park-wise, but Francisco Liriano has nasty stuff. He always has. It's a matter of being able to command it to where the walks don't hurt him. He had a rough go of it last year. Things didn't go his way with Pittsburgh. He gets into Toronto back with Russell Martin, as you mentioned, and things took off. So I actually like him a lot this year in all formats, but this format especially, I really wanted him.
So looking at some of the rest of the players on your team, obviously at the very top of the list, you had Harper and Trout and Trevor Story you mentioned as well, and you had Nolan Arenado. So it's really unbelievable that could happen. But a player that we just spoke about, it really is incredible. Just saying,
isn't that
it again.
Why we like auctions? Yeah. No more bitching and complaining. Oh, I couldn't get this guy because I had a seventh. Well, yes, you can in an auction. You want to buy. I think you spent $203 on five players. So, hey, yeah. You can do it.
So, but the player we actually just talked about in the previous segment is Javi Baez. Concerns about him getting requisite number of plate appearances?
There's some concern, but at $5, I thought he was an amazing piece for this team, if I can brag about it for a moment, because I shouldn't have gotten him for $5. That's a great gamble that I can take on somebody who can now be a double-digit player where I couldn't get, you know, I'm trying to think of somebody that's kind of in that mid-range that is solid, that it definitely went for their requisite. I think Daniel Murphy went pretty cheap in this league. He went for like $15. And I couldn't afford somebody like that. And I'm not saying that Javier Baez is going to do what Daniel Murphy does equally. I'm saying that the dollar value, if he can be like a $15 player, it was worth the gamble at $5. If you notice, too, he has three positions,
yes.
And I like that position flexibility. My team, the way it is, you know, I might not have a lot of movement on the edges there, and so I want to have the availability to move guys in and out of different position lineups so that I can go for different free agents. So I really valued his flexibility. I know we have a hard time valuing the flexibility, but for $5, I thought that was kind of crazy. And again, OBP goes back to OBP, and that can be a struggle for Javi Baez, and maybe that's why folks didn't want him. But at $5, I thought I stole him.
Yeah, I paid $12 in my NFBC auction last night, 15-teamer. I thought I had him at 10. Somebody said 11 at the last second, and maybe I shouldn't have said 12, but I just believe in the talent will win out somehow, some way. He's going to get the at-bats. He's got the power. He's got the speed. And he's one of the best second basemen in all of baseball. Unfortunately, he's not playing that position every day.
Well, his defense is amazing, and I do think it will get him because, to your point about the plate appearances, you know, he's going to move around. That's the way they do it in Chicago. But a talent like this, when he gets going, when Javier Baez gets going, they're going to let him play. Now, I think we saw toward the end of the playoffs last year what the downside can be with him, and he'll start flailing. I don't think he's a finished product yet. If you kind of like measured his fantasy hype throughout the playoffs, in the early playoffs, it's like he's going to be a top five rounder. Everyone's going crazy.
MVP.
Yeah, and then you go into the World Series, you're like, okay, that's the Javi Baez that we remember, and it's still a little bit of a flawed player. But again, $5. I'll take the $5 gamble all day long. I don't see any way outside of him getting back to like the 44% strikeout rate from his debut that I ever, you know, look to get rid of him. He's going to be, even if he's just the $5 guy, I'm okay with it.
Sure.
But I think he could be a $15 guy.
Yeah. And I think the other $1 pitcher you got that I'm really excited for is Mike Foltynewicz.
Yep.
You know, mid-90s fastball. I think, as I've been saying all morning, I think that Braves team is going to be competitive.
I agree.
So
That's going to be a team that's going to win between low, you know, low and high. They're going to be in the 70s, which is a team that if a few things break right, if you're kind of projected for around 70-something wins, few things break right, all of a sudden you're talking maybe 500. You know, they wanted to put a competitive team on the field. We saw some of their, like, win-now moves, and it looks a little bit weird. It doesn't impede really any of their prospects. I think they just wanted to open SunTrust Park nicely. But Foltynewicz, his stuff is devastating. You mentioned the fastball. The secondary stuff mm-hmm. is really good, too, and I think he's starting to show some control of it last year. This year is like the command, and obviously the difference, control throwing strikes in the zone, command putting the ball where you want it. He started to show that last year.
Well, George,
thoughts on Foltynewicz?
I'm a fan as well. I think Paul hit it at the end, just control. Control and command, not putting people on base freely over time.
Exactly.
I'm a believer. I'm believing in what everybody said. I like Atlanta. I don't know if I'm going to say a dark horse for the playoffs, but I think they're not going to be an afterthought anymore. And this is a team, their minor league system is coming up. You give it a couple of years, that National League East is going to be no fun.
No. You don't want anything to do with that National League East, and the Braves are going to be a part of it. They've got a great farm system. And, yeah, you know, I agree with you. Not necessarily dark horse, but, again, two, three things break right. One of Bartolo and Dickey recaptures something and starts pitching. Well, Jaime Garcia stays healthy for some reason.
Sure, Newcomb second half, maybe.
Yeah, and that's the thing. They can start bringing up the guys in the second half. So, yeah, they're a team that I don't mind. You know, wins still do matter in this league, and so I don't think he's necessarily going to be wins deficient, Mike Fultonevich.
Matt actually brought up something earlier to continue the Braves talk, that they could be a dark horse in the Jose Quintana sweepstakes.
Absolutely.
But George also brings up the counterpoint that they have enough young arms coming up that maybe they don't need to get involved. Do they need to sacrifice some of that for a pitcher that maybe takes them from a non-playoff team to a playoff team when they're not ready to win at all?
And that could be one of those things where putting a team like this together and giving yourself maybe some false hope, where if they play very well in the first 2 months and then all of a sudden they move a couple key prospects for Quintana and it's like, that wasn't a bad move, but was it the right move? I completely agree with you there. They have to be careful of that. They need to kind of stick to the plan. And unless the team just starts really overperforming and Dansby Swanson looks like an MVP or something like that, don't get crazy if your major components are Jaime Garcia, Brandon Phillips, and R.A. Dickey. Because if they're dominating through May, you can probably expect them to fall back. Now, if it's younger guys, like I said, Dansby Swanson dominating, Freddie Freeman doing his normal stuff, and some of these pitchers coming to fruition, then maybe they look at maybe making a move. By the way, is this Oklahoma Sooners? I wouldn't have agreed to this if I'd seen this Oklahoma Sooners thing.
Sorry. It's just I had some bookmarks on there for other reasons, but this is the stuff you need to worry about. You know, baseball reference that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I'm a University of Texas Longhorns, so that's why I got to mention that.
There you go. So go ahead.
Well, like as Paul was saying, I'm actually a huge fan of the Brandon Phillips trade. He finally agreed to leave Cincinnati. He's going home to Atlanta. I mean, the guy's batted .290 the last 2 years, double-digit homers, double-digit stolen bases. I think that lineup just gets deeper with him there. Maybe it's a swan song, but I bought him for $2 last night. He's a guy that I don't mind having as my middle infielder late in drafts. And getting back on the Fultonevich, like the first pitch strike was almost 64%. Do you foresee the swinging strike percentage, which was, I say, 10%, that creeping up too?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Last year, he figured out some control. And again, that's just hitting the zone regularly because walks were an issue, as you were mentioning, throughout the early part of his career. He would just load up the bases, and you get in trouble when you start giving out free passes. He figured out, Fultonevich did, how to get ahead and really start working to avoid the walks. Now I think he starts throwing more quality strikes where he's in command of everything and getting guys to chase. He has swing and miss stuff, not just the fastball, but the secondary stuff. I think it could be a really big year. I think it's at least going to be a step forward year, but it could be that two-step forward for Fultonevich. Remember, he was a big prospect. Now, some folks thought he was going to end up being a closer, but he's showing that he's probably going to end up being a starter now.
You criticize yourself here on Twitter, and you could follow Paul at Spore. He is... you can catch him at Fangraphs as well. Just to give you an idea where to catch Paul. He's writer, podcaster for Fangraphs and ESPN Daily Notes. Catch him on Twitter at Spore. Again, it's Paul Spore. But you criticize yourself for throwing Eric Thames out there for $5 and getting crickets. So what happened there?
I just thought that he would go more. I'm using my draft software. I'm looking. And the price that it had him for, I think, was like 14. So I thought $5 was enough to kind of get it started, but not go crazy. And I get straight crickets, and this is at a time when I do not have money.
Right.
And that money was supposed to be allocated to make sure that I could get the Ian Kennedys, specifically Ian Kennedy, Fultonevich, and Liriano, even if I had to pay $2 or $3 for one of them. And instead, that put me in dollar days. So I thought I was done for. And I was seriously upset about that move. And it ended up not hurting me at the end. But you can see, like you said, the live thought process there was, I'm done. And I just thought that it was going to cut all my maneuverability and leave me at the mercy of my opponents, a spot you don't want to be. Well, They went to sleep. They gave me the pitchers I want. Now they're going to get dominated.
Nice. So Ivan Nova, a couple other your reserves here. Ivan Nova, Ben Revere, just looking for some upside guys there.
Absolutely. I don't have a ton of speed with these superstars. And so, you know, I'm not super worried about speed. I'm not going to be trying to go for it a lot. But I think Ben Revere actually, in the grand scheme, whether it's this format or others, is going way too cheaply. He had such an unlucky year last year. I know he was hurt, and I think it was just the injury. So it's a matter of if he's healthy this year. Cameron Maben, speaking of health, cannot stay healthy, and I like the guy, but he just can't. So I think Ben Revere is going to get his playing time. We've seen it before in past years where even a fourth outfielder like this can get you 30 stolen bases pretty easily. So I wanted to get Ben Revere. That was actually a specific target. Ivan Nova was as well. Not going to be a huge K per nine guy, which is what this league uses, but I think the ERA and WHIP, using him for two start weeks in Pittsburgh, is going to be really good. And then Darren O'Day and Joe Kelly speak to the league format because they're specific for their K9 prowess.
Yeah, good stuff. So appreciate it, Paul. Thank you for stopping by. And as he said on Twitter, what if I told you that you could have a fantasy team with Mike Trout, Bryce Harper, Nolan Arenado, and Joey Votto? Impossible, right? Well, it wasn't. He did it last night in the mixed head-to-head.
That's it.
Mixed head-to-head
auction.
Yeah, auction draft.
And 12 so. Teams, by the way. I want to make sure that 12 teams compared to 15. Most of these leagues are 15 teams. The 12-team aspect of it also changes things. Some people forget that, and they go crazy.
Everybody, I'm still impressed. I don't think many people are going to be pulling this off, whether it's 12 teams, 8 teams, whatever it is. It's a pretty sick lineup to start. So thank you. You can find Paul at Spore on Twitter, writer, podcaster for FanGraphs and ESPN Daily Notes. So thank you for having us on. We'll be back after this with Patrick Davitt from Baseball HQ. Welcome back to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We continue our Tout Wars coverage. Just talked to Paul Spore from FanGraphs, and we have with us Patrick Davitt from Baseball HQ. You can catch him on Twitter at Patrick Davitt. That's Davitt, spelling of the last name. So we've tweeted that out also through our handle at FNTSY Radio. So first of all, Patrick, thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's so much fun.
Yeah, excited to be here in New York, I assume.
You know, when I was a single man, I used to come here 3 times a year. I'd go down to the Angelica Film Center at 11 in the morning, stay till 2 the next morning, and watch 7 movies. Because where I lived at the time, the kind of movies you see at the Angelica Film Center, you couldn't see where I lived. So yeah, I'd come down and binge.
So where do you hail from?
I'm originally from Regina, Saskatchewan in Canada. Now I live in Waterloo, Ontario, about an hour outside of Toronto.
Very nice. Very nice. So, well, thank you for joining us.
Hockey Hopefully fan?
I'm sorry?
Hockey fan?
Actually, I'm not, you know.
Why is everybody I know in Canada that's involved in fantasy not a hockey fan?
You know what?
It's really funny.
I'll watch the semifinals and the finals of the Stanley Cup tournament because at that point they're serious. But the regular season's unwatchable. They're clearly not trying because it's just too much of a grind. It's kind of like the NBA that way, you know, half-hearted defense during the season.
I agree with that to some extent. Hockey's a fun sport, but
it's great to watch.
I think there's only so much you can do to keep up that pace. The Stanley Cup playoffs is why I do find to be extremely exciting, though, because in almost any sport, you don't see guys going all out the way they do in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
And you have to.
So there's your hockey compliment, George. I'm sorry we have a Canadian guest.
And another one who doesn't like hockey.
Well, I'm a huge hockey fan as well. So.
All right. So, well, going into, obviously, you're not going to reveal all your secrets and strategies just before you do the draft at 9 o'clock, but you were mentioning it during the break that this is really the only draft that you compete in. Many of the experts we talked to, Paul Spore we just had on, and even George and Matt and myself to some extent, are doing multiple drafts and playing in different types of leagues. But you kind of go all your eggs in one basket with this AL-only Tout Wars draft.
Yeah, and you know, I used to be 6-7 leagues a year, just like most guys. And I think partly because when you're in the business as we are, you should really play multiple formats, because you're writing for an audience that plays multiple formats.
Sure.
And I was at First Pitch Arizona, the excellent Chandler Fest, they call it, in Arizona, about 5 or 6 years ago. And we had a guest speaker, Kimball Crossley, his name is. He's a guy in the front office at Toronto. He's a scout, a team scout, an organizational scout. And he was giving his address to a packed house at the event. And he said, show of hands, how many people here play in more than one league? And everybody's hand shoots up. And he says, you know what? You're not doing it right. He said, if you're trying to pretend that you're a major league general manager, there's no major league general manager who's running two teams.
That's a fair point.
And so if you're running seven or eight teams and you're any good at it at all, one of them's going to win, and then you can pat yourself on the back. He said, but that's not how life is. If you want to be serious about it, he said, pick one format, pick one team, and get after it and win that format. And then maybe move on to some other format. That's fine, too. But I did play in the Daily League, the Tout Daily League last year. In fact, I won it, and that was fun. But I don't think Daily Fantasy has anything to do with, like, full-season fantasy. I think they're two completely different games.
Yeah, I think two different skill sets, yeah. For sure. Guys that are great at DFS may not, frankly, have any interest in playing season-long leagues and may not be very good at it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of patience involved in season-long leagues that you have to become accustomed to and get used to going through some valleys before you hit the peaks and certainly drive to the championship.
And I should admit, I was certainly not the best DFS player in that competition. There are some guys there who make money at it. I don't really even play it that much. But it's an interesting intellectual exercise. You sit down and you try to figure out, how am I going to pick my players? And the reason I really don't like it is that it just seems like there's such a huge luck factor involved. And I know other people say to me, well, you draft a guy at Tout Wars, and if he gets hurt, you're out of luck because it's a single league format. There's nothing in the free agent pool. And I say, I acknowledge that. I mean, there's an element of luck to it, but when you're playing a single night of fantasy baseball, there's way more luck involved in it, just clearly. I mean, Mike Trout can have a bad night. Mike Trout could get hurt, but it seems unlikely, you know, and it's those kind of differences. But I'll play it. I mean, if they say, you know, you win some money and whatever it is.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think the point is true. I know I myself, I used to play in 8 to 12 leagues. I'm trying to cut down now because you can't be as good in 8 because you can't pay attention when fab is, when you got to do this, do that, do all your moves. So I completely agree. I guess this is a kind of a dumb question. I'm assuming the mono AL only is your favorite type of league to play in, or?
It is, and the reason is the very first league I ever got involved in back in the early 90s, which is a story in itself, but that was an AL only league, and you just get used to that level of preparation. You know, you have to dig deeper into the pool than you have to in mixed, and I found in mixed, I've played all the formats over time, but I found that especially in 12-team mixed, it was like every guy had an all-star team. And then it kind of, in a weird way, comes back to luck. You know, which one of your guys slightly outperforms his expectations, and nobody ever drafts that, you know, $2 outfielder at the end of the draft. I had Paulo Orlando last year from Kansas City in this draft because I had to. I needed a $1 outfielder at the end, and I thought, well, he can run a little, you know. I mean, at that point, you're really grasping at straws. And I thought, you know, Kansas City, maybe a chance for some playing time there. And sure enough, I mean, I think he was ended up being worth $9 or $10 and helped me finish second in the league. And in the one of the good things about this format of league, I think, is that it's won or lost on those $1, $2, $3 players, because everybody's going to have an Altuve or similar. Everybody's going to have a Mike Trout. Everybody's going to have a top player, probably a top pitcher. I saw in the Labor American League draft, the top pitchers, Sale went for $30, Kluber went for $29. So everybody's going to have one of those. One of the reasons I finished second in American League Tout last year, I had Rick Porcello for $8. I had Jay Happ for $4. And that's where you win or lose leagues. You win or lose leagues on profit. You don't win or lose leagues just on you know, getting $30 worth of production, because if you pay $30 for it, you're no farther ahead.
Well, my fellow hockey fan across me, George, stole my question, but I want to let everybody know, Patrick...
Drop the gloves.
Yeah, exactly. Patrick is the host of the Baseball HQ podcast. It is an excellent podcast, and if you haven't checked it out, everybody should check it out.
Yeah, iTunes or baseballhq.com/radio.
Great. So, and definitely go to Twitter at Patrick Davitt, and I'm sure you can find some additional information. So, give us a little bit more color on the format of this draft. So, it's AL only. How many teams?
There's 12 teams, and it's a not quite a standard roster setup. We have, instead of five outfielders, we have four, and then the 14th position on the hitting roster, you can convert it to a pitcher. So you can go with 13 hitters, 10 pitchers, or you can stick with 14-9. And I've done this for a couple of years, and everybody always goes 14-9. But you're allowed to move back and forth during the season. So if you think, if you got a hitter hurt, and because the pool is so shallow, given the way that major league rosters are changing, you know, there's fewer and fewer hitters and more pitchers. So if you've got an injured offensive player, you can replace him with a pitcher.
That's
and run
a
with a pitcher for 3 or 4 weeks. Yeah, the league is always tinkering with the rules without going overboard, because it's really important for fans, for people who are watching these experts drafts, that they kind of look like the leagues they play in. And so, you know, there was we talk about in the offseason, we talk about what rules would you like to see changed. In all the leagues that I've ever been in or been involved with, and I still stay in touch with these guys, I think we should just change the rules as far as the hitter-pitcher mix in general, because it used to be we were getting roughly three quarters of each. And now, because the way Major League rosters are changing, it used to be way more tilted towards hitters. Everybody had five bench players. Now they got three. And when you get through a 14-man roster in a 12-team league, there's literally only third catchers left and minor league guys and maybe a few bench enders. And if you get any kind of injury, you're really in trouble. And so, which is fine. I mean, it's something you have to manage. And there's, of course, call-ups during the year, and you can manage it to a certain extent that way as well. But the focus then becomes way more on managing injury risk. Like, you look at all your players and you say, well, ordinarily in a mixed league, I'd draft this guy anyway, because if he gets hurt, I'll just go into the pool and replace him.
Yeah.
But in this AL Toto, single league format, and anybody who plays the format, you look at a guy that you're thinking of drafting and say, well, you know, three injuries in the last 4 years, he's missed 90 games over that time. I can't afford to roster that risk. It's just not going to happen for me. So I just walk away and say, I'll spend the extra dollar, or I'll get a slightly worse player that I'm way more confident is going to play 140 games.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, because to your point, it mirrors the manner in which Major League Baseball teams are being managed, right? You have the flexibility to switch between a pitcher and a hitter. I think in one of the leagues that I play in, we also have that same flexibility. Right. So I can kind of appreciate that. It mirrors the way the league is managed, frankly, more so than maybe a standard fantasy league that doesn't have that flexibility, George, right?
I don't think I've ever played in a league. I mean, I like it. I like the roll up. I don't think I've ever played in a league like that.
Yeah.
I think it is a way to go, sort of a flex position for baseball.
That's right.
Same thing there. You said, you know, as far as changing rules, are you with, I know this is an OBP league, right?
It's an OBP league. It has been for several years.
Yeah. Do you like the idea of getting rid of Ws? Go for quality start to stay?
Actually, I wrote a column about this at baseballhq.com. I do the Master Notes column once a week. It's kind of a personality type of column, a little bit funny, tongue-in-cheek, you know. But I was pretty serious about this, because I don't think wins is a good category.
Agreed.
But I have to say, I also don't like leagues where they go with K9 and walks per nine or strikeouts per walks and those kind of more sabermetric categories, because they're too predictable, right? You know that, you know, a 10 strikeout per nine guy last year is very, very likely to be a 10 strikeout per nine guy this year. But counting his strikeouts takes into account, is he going to miss a start? Is he going to get hurt? Is he going to have a bad game? All of these kind of things, which don't affect the ratio, but affect the count. And I think the real interest or the real fun of playing fantasy baseball is that there's that amount of watching the game to find out what your guy did. And the analogy I used was, it would be like going to the racetrack, but they don't run the races. You just bet the form. And whoever's good at interpreting the form wins all the money. And, of course, nobody likes that. You want to, every so often, you want to bet a 19-1 shot and have it come in. And you go, look at me. Aren't I brilliant? So I proposed, I don't like quality starts either. But I proposed, Nolan Ryan said a quality start should be 7 innings, 3 innings, or three
right.
runs or less.
That's right.
And so I did a bunch of calculations and showed that if you go to Ryan quality starts, I called them, which is that, and count them, there's virtually exactly the same number of them in a year among starters as there is wins, first of all. So you don't have to teach everybody who's playing to recalibrate their expectations for the category.
Right.
85 Ryan quality starts is going to win you the category in most years. The ERAs in wins and Ryan quality starts are roughly the same, and so on down the list. I mean, it's the difference is it's way less fluky. Like, Ryan quality starts are a little more predictable from pitcher to pitcher over the years, and wins are not. I mean, we all know wins is absolutely a crapshoot. We've all had pitchers have great years and win 9 games, and had terrible pitchers who won like 17 games. I had Mark Buehrle 1 year. He's an okay pitcher, you know. I mean, soft tossing, junk ball, left hander, I think he won his first 10 or 11 starts for me, and yeah. he didn't pitch well, you know. On the one hand, he's winning all these games for me. On the other hand, he's just killing my decimals. He's given up an uncharacteristic amount of walks. He's given up hits. He's not, of course, not striking out anybody. He's a fairly not useful pitcher, except he just kept winning every darn start that he had, and I couldn't cut him until he started. Finally, the corner turned and his luck turned, and he started not winning games, and at that point I felt a lot more comfortable.
So Paul Spohr actually mentioned something previously. It's the last question for you, because I know you got to get prepped for the draft, but it's an OBP league, and yeah. Paul's thought process as he was going through his draft last night is that people sometimes, because it's an OBP league, spend a little bit too much time paying attention to that category. Do you find that to be the case as well?
I think it really was in the early going. I can remember when we first switched the category, there was an awful lot of scuttlebutt about, you know, what your strategy should be is get Joey Votto or get Mike Trout. These guys are 420 OBP guys.
Ironically, Paul got both of those on that team last night.
Well, yeah, and they're both excellent players as well, you know, over and above everything else. Joey Votto's an amazing hitter. I just did a study for my Master Notes column just recently about outcomes. So you measure like hard hit line drives, hard hit grounders, hard hit fly balls, things that tend to become hits. And I said, which hitters get a lot of those and have fewer of the poor outcomes? Infield flies, soft hit fly balls, cans of corn fly balls and that. And if you subtract the good from the bad, you can identify the good hitters. You know, Joey Votto hasn't hit an infield fly in like 7 years. Not one in wow. 7 years.
Amazing.
It is amazing. And his line drive percentage is always one of the league leaders. And we say, I think erroneously, because of the word regression in our business, we always say that everybody's going to regress to the mean. And the mean in Major League Baseball is 20-21% line drives, right? But Joey Votto every year hits 26% line drives. And at some point we have to say, you know what? He's got this skill. We have to acknowledge he's got this skill. Similarly, Marco Estrada every year has maybe 10% infield flies. Not of his fly balls, of his batter's face. And if you think about that, what's the difference between an infield fly and a strikeout as far as a pitcher is concerned? Nothing. They're automatic outs. They don't advance runners. You can't score a run on an infield fly. There's that 1 in 5,000 chance where the three guys in the middle of the infield stand there after you, Alphonse, and the thing drops in the middle. But basically, an infield fly is a strikeout that doesn't count as a strikeout. In fact, if you count strikeouts as a percentage of batters faced and add it, I mean infield flies, and add it to the strikeouts and combine those two things and call them useless outs or whatever you want, all of a sudden Marco Estrada goes from being a very borderline kind of pitcher at the bottom because of the relatively low strikeout rate. He shoots up the chart into, well, not quite Kershaw-Scherzer territory, but he's top 20 in all of baseball if you add those two things together. Now, unfortunately, he gives up a lot of fly balls, and in Toronto that's not so good, so he's a little more home run prone, and you have to be aware of that too. But I think, you know, when you start thinking about things in that way, or just try to think of things in new ways, it's amazing what fun you can have just trying to figure it out, because not only does it help you in fantasy baseball, but in watching the regular game. Because I watch the regular game all the time, as we all do, on TV, or go down to Toronto and watch the game, and you'll hear people talking about, oh, and they still go with this RBIs are really important and that kind of stuff, and you think, they're not, you know. I mean, they happen, and they happen for a reason because the guy's a good hitter. But it's so lineup dependent and all this kind of stuff. And
it's situational.
I watch Estrada, and lots of great outcomes. I like Marco Estrada.
That's great stuff. I appreciate it. So Patrick Davitt, that was Patrick Davitt from Baseball HQ. Read his Master Notes column. I'm sure you'll share that with us
free
on Twitter.
Too. You can sign up for it on email. Go to baseballhq.com in the free section. Sign up.
Great stuff. So good luck in the AL draft at 9 o'clock. That's
Thank
Patrick
you.
Davitt, folks. We'll be back with Mike Podhorzer after this. Welcome back to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. This is the Roto Experts in the Morning, and it's Tout Wars weekend, so we're doing Tout Wars coverage. We had Paul Sporer on, we had Patrick Davitt on, and now we welcome to the program Mike Podhorzer. You catch him on Twitter at Mike Podhorzer. That's Podhorzer. He's the 2015 FSWA Baseball Writer of the Year. He contributes to Rotographs and author of Projecting X 2.0. So thank you, first of all, Mike, for joining the program. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me in this early, early morning.
Yeah. So, we're a little bit used to it. I know you got a draft coming up at 9 o'clock. So the AL-only tout. You're going to be competing against Patrick Davitt and many other experts from around the league. But have you competed in any other drafts very recently? Did you do any? Matt had one yesterday. Didn't know if you did any yesterday or very recently.
I had my local league auction on Sunday. And then about what feels like a year ago was the Labor Mixed Draft, mid-February. It's super early every year. We got to make sure it has enough time to get into the USA Today fantasy preview issue. And back then, a month and a half ago, there were so many position battles that are still up in the air. So it makes it a real challenge to draft that early.
Yeah. So what do you think? What is one thing that you would say has changed for you the most? Forget. I mean, obviously, there's been some significant injuries. We talked about J.D. Martinez earlier this morning. Obviously, Didi Gregorius is somebody that's been sent to the DL since that time. Frankly, Alex Reyes has been declared a Tommy John candidate, as well as some other players. So setting those aside, what are maybe a couple of things that you've seen change recently? There's a couple of closer battles that have probably had more clarity than they did.
Well, actually, Jung Ho Gong, his situation was up in the air after He got into some trouble in Korea, and we weren't sure if he was going to be able to make it into the U.S. this season. And when we get a little more clarity, he was denied a visa. He might not even play this year. And I actually drafted him in the Labor League. I actually took him in the reserve round in my auction on Sunday. And I thought it's a late-round play. It was worth the risk. And it would have been if he's going to play, but he might not play anymore. So kind of cross him off your draft list now.
Yeah, I don't think I'm taking Kong in any league, so that's going to be a problem. And what, he's got three DWIs in Korea. I can understand why he's having some visa problems, especially with our Mr. Trump in charge. So not shocked there at
Extreme
all.
Vetting.
Yeah.
Yeah, and maybe the Koreans should have taken care of that problem themselves rather than pretty much giving him a slap on the wrist. Is this your favorite type of league to play in?
Definitely an auction league. AL only, I like the deepness of it, but I do like the fact that in mixed leagues you can draft any player. I kind of don't like the fact that I am required to only draft AL players. So it's a good thing that I'm in a mix of leagues. You know, I'm in mixed leagues. I'm in this AL only league. I just need to add an NL only league to my slate, and then we're all good.
So, Mike, for everybody, I think Mike's one of the smartest guys out there in this industry. He's a great guy to listen to. He's a fan of falafel, which is wonderful. And who's your guy this year? Everybody's eating right now. They're stuffing their faces. Nobody's paying attention. Who's the guy that's going to win you this AL-only auction?
As long as nobody's listening.
No one is. It's my family, that's all.
You know what? I'm really paying close attention to the Minnesota Twins DH competition. It's between Kenneth Vargas, and we all assumed going into the season that it would be Kenneth Vargas because Byung-ho Park was a big disappointment last year. He was designated for assignment. We thought, all right, he's off the 40-man, and that's it. But he actually had a really good spring training. There's raves about him and his improvements, and I thought that he was in for a rebound before he was DFA'd, and now he's going to be battling Vargas. So I really feel like whoever wins that battle is going to come at a nice discount and really yield a strong profit.
Yeah, Park's a guy that I would be targeting in AL only. I did an AL only auction about 2 weeks ago, and he was the first reserve guy I selected.
I'm not going to put you on the spot. I'll talk about a National League. Let's talk about the Mets a little bit. What, you're a big believer in Mats. I'm getting so many questions about Mats that people want to take him. Great stuff, but his history tells us he can't last a full season.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about injury risk, and that can describe the entire Mets staff. Basically, I think they have the potential to be one of the best staffs in baseball, or the potential where their entire starting five is on the DL at the same time. So you really don't know what you're going to get. I like Mats. He has all of the underlying skills. He's got the stuff, but he's got the injury issues. And can he actually make it 180, 200 innings? I don't think anybody knows. So I think in terms of fantasy, he probably won't be too expensive. You can buy him, assuming, let's say, 160 innings with good skills. And anything else is a bonus. I think in a shallower league, you definitely take the risk because the replacement level is higher. You could always replace him if he goes down. In a deeper league, it's a bit riskier because then your alternatives are not very good bets. So I'm still a Mets fan. It just depends on the league format and how aggressive you go after him.
So, again, we're with Mike Podhorzer. You catch him at Mike Podhorzer on Twitter. 2015 FSWA Baseball Writer of the Year, and your content is on Rotographs and ProjectingX.com. Is that right?
ProjectingX 2.0 is where you can find my ebook.
Okay. So good stuff. So I would ask you, just, you know, fantasy aside for 1 second, your thoughts on the World Baseball Classic. Obviously, we had a little bit of a taste of some competitive baseball here in March, and not your split squads and all kinds of guys being rested that we want to see play. The guys got a chance to get out there. Obviously, there's a couple of injury concerns coming out of it, but beyond that, what did you think of it overall?
It's funny because everybody at work knows that I'm in the fantasy industry, and they always come to me with baseball questions, ask me about things. And they ask me about the WBC. Am I watching? And to be honest, I just haven't watched even a minute of the games, and I simply just don't care. I don't know. Maybe I just don't have any patriotism. I don't really care about the U.S. But to me, you know, the games don't matter, and I kind of feel like I wish I did watch because I know this year was supposed to be great. I saw some highlights, Adam Jones robbing Manny Machado, which looked like an awesome play, but I don't really care all that much. And the whole injury thing, look, if you're playing in spring training, you could get injured as well. I don't know. I don't really love it because they have to kind of go at 100% already, and I know that the hitters really are still trying to get their timing around. So spring training, you're supposed to take it slow, but with the WBC, you go right into it fast, and I don't know. It just, timing-wise, it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. So I'm on a slight negative for me in terms of...
You would vote it out if you
yeah,
could.
Yeah, probably. I'm just not that into it, and I just think it kind of ruins things and makes my projecting a little more difficult.
it's fair. I would ask you a question just strategy-wise. So, obviously, you don't have to give away all your tools before you get involved in this draft at 9 o'clock. Again, the AL-only Tout Wars draft. But is there a particular thing that you would tell people to do that are maybe trying to take their game to the next level that they have to do from a strategy standpoint, or something in particular that you think it's really important for somebody to do during the course of an auction draft like this?
I think it's really important to kind of ignore what everybody else is doing and what everybody else is paying for players, and kind of come up with your own projections and your own values and your own opinions, and don't get swayed by the crowd. And that's where you actually can take advantage and really generate nice profit, because you're actually doing something different from the crowd. You can get guys at discounts that others don't see, and you need to look at underlying skills as well. So you're not following the surface stats like batting average or home runs. Look at home run per fly ball ratio. Look at BABIP. And those are better metrics to look at to analyze future performance.
That's the second guest we've had in a row that's mentioned the word profit. And I think that's a real key when you're talking about these auction drafts. It's not about what you're paying for certain players. It's frankly just the profit that you're trying to extract out of each player and your team as a whole. So I think that's important. I'll pass it over to you, Matt.
I'm not going to put you on the spot again, so we'll pass on that one. But a National League player,
he did that.
A National League player that I know you've been a fan of in the past, and this is, I'm going to be selfish here. It's a me question for my drafts for later. Billy Hamilton this season. What is the Mike Podhorzer forecast?
Oh, Billy Hamilton, the guy I took in the second round of the labor draft 2 years ago, and everybody around the world heard about it. I don't know. I think he is what he is. Obviously, he has got no power. 60 steals is probably the fair projection. Can he steal 80? Probably. But teams just aren't running as often. And the thing that I really always worry about him is that his on-base percentage is low, so there's always that risk that he gets dropped to the bottom of the order. And now that Jose Peraza has a full-time job, he's a reasonable alternative. And he's projected for a higher on-base percentage, so he actually makes more sense as a leadoff hitter with Billy Hamilton batting 8th or 9th. So that's the risk if you draft Hamilton. I actually, surprisingly, didn't draft Hamilton in either of my drafts. But, you know, at the right price, I'm still open to drafting him. But I think there's serious risk there.
We heard in Washington they're going to go with Cody Glover at a relief pitcher, closer. How much do you trust us in a mixed league auction? Let's say mixed league. How much are you spending for him? How do you go about closes in general in a mixed league?
Dusty Baker throwing us all off. I don't know. I don't really believe that Cody Glover is going to actually open the season as a closer. What has he thrown, like 10, 15 major league innings in his entire career? I like his underlying skills, but he's proven nothing. Sean Kelly has been an established, strong relief pitcher for many, many years now. Yes, he's had some injury issues, but he's healthy. I just don't understand why they would throw a guy like Glover into the closer role when they have Kelly, who's perfectly capable of running with the job. So I really don't think that Glover is actually going to open the year. Maybe down the line this season if Kelly finds himself in the DL, but my money would be on Sean Kelly as the closer. You could probably get him at a discount now, and maybe in the reserve round pick up Cody Glover.
Good stuff. From Mike Podhorzer, you catch him on Twitter at Mike Podhorzer. You go to projectingx.com. You get his ebook. Where can you find the ebook?
Projectingx.com.
Okay, just making sure. So he's going to do the AL-only Tout Wars draft in about 12, 13 minutes. It's getting started here at Rockin' Riley's. Then he's going to hang out at Foley's after that. So good stuff from Mike. And we'll be back with more guests after this. We're back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, Roto Experts in the Morning, and some guy showed up. Never met him before. He's here as a guest. What do you go by? Nando, is that your name?
Yeah, that's... Well, actually, funny story. I'm not a Starbucks guy at all, right?
Okay.
But I went because I had to get like an iced tea or something.
By the way,
sweet.
If anybody ever described themselves as a Starbucks guy, I'd have issues with that.
I guess you're right. Yeah. I had to get my iced tea lemonade.
Okay.
And they just don't understand Nando. So I go by Jeff when I'm at Starbucks.
That's your alias.
Yeah.
They can't spell Nando on the cup?
It's like, oh, it's just Fernando or like, no.
Fernando?
It's just Jeff. Let's just go with Jeff.
So anyway, you can catch Nando on Twitter at Nando DeFino. He is jack of all trades for the Fantasy Sports Network and Roto Experts and Sports Grid and everything else.
Rockin' Riley's.
Rockin'
yeah,
Riley's.
Sure. Throw it in there. Yeah.
And Jeff at Starbucks.
And he's Jeff at Starbucks.
Taking bartender afterwards?
Yeah, right. I'm going to be serving drinks, start at 3.
So you got, you're in the AL only Tower Wars draft. Excited?
Yeah, found out last night it's not average. It's OBP. So that was a shock.
K-9 too.
Yeah, right? Holds. So, the count holds.
So Paul Spohr was on earlier, and he was saying that when people shift from average leagues to OBP leagues, they tend to freak out about the category. And they spend a little bit too much time and effort trying to get high OBP guys and maybe throws them off. Do you feel the same way? Have you noticed that?
No, I think it'll just happen by accident. With the last 3 years in mixed since I started it, I've been like last, third to last, and like second to last.
Nice job.
Consistent. I somehow punt OBP.
He is one of the roto experts.
It's boring, dude. I mean, yeah. Do you want a guy who walks? Like, I guess Joey Votto's a bad example because he hits home runs and does other stuff. But
yeah, I mean, Joey Votto is, you know, he's excellent at many categories. So
right. The boring, like, I got to chase walks. I don't know. It's just not for me. Pass.
But it may not be for you, but it's in the league.
I know.
You have to care about it.
I just think it's going to happen. I ran a correlation between runs and OBP, and they correlate pretty strongly. So if I'm going after runs guys, I'll happen upon OBP guys. It's just the last few years I haven't gone after the runs guys like I should have. Their price was too inflated. So,
how have you fared in these leagues despite your lack of performance in that category?
I was consistently finishing top four for a couple of years, and then just last year was a lot of bad luck. Though. I got Gordon.
I'm glad we have you on.
what advice can I impart here?
Well, I'm not sure how Nando's going to do this year, but I think the guy Jeff from Starbucks has a really good chance.
Jeff from Starbucks is going to dominate.
All right, so who do you – I mean, obviously, you're competing with a whole bunch of other experts here, but who's the guy that you look at and it's like, man, this guy is just hard to beat?
I think Colton, the Wolfman. They're two really smart guys put together. They're like that rare team that gets along really well.
Yeah. They do football together, too.
Yeah, that's why. It's so weird. Like, they're not polar opposites, but they have their own, you know, ways of going about things, but they've combined to make this – I've never seen a partnership like theirs before. It's just
really
good. I don't know. You watch the show Legion? You watch the Legion on FM?
No, sorry. No.
Well, there's a guy who has a woman. They share the body. That's how I think of them.
That's a very odd show.
They're Carrie and Carrie from Legion.
Which one's the woman?
We'll talk about that later.
That's we'll talk about that.
Bad example. Air. Bad example.
Comparing to the team that I shared with a friend, I put this in quotes. He gave up the team without telling me about 3 weeks ago. I told him, I will take it. Don't worry about it. You don't have to manage it anymore. He just gave it up. So I'm out of the league.
Unbeknownst to me. Guy?
No, he's not.
Yeah, we wouldn't.
He's not men for others. No way. Anyway, so that's a Jesuit joke there for
ever to excel.
Yeah, that's right. Well, they're the worst basketball team in America, so it's not exactly excelling. So, any players? You don't have to give away your.
Oh, I don't care.
Secrets, but you know you're not performing all that well in this league anyway. So, it really,
tell you what, man, I'm going to take down AL. I think my problem in mixed was I went too deep. Like I love like the deep $1 players.
Trust me. I know this very much about you. In every sport, I call it the Nando DeFino All-Stars when we're talking about Taylor Gabriel, who was actually really good this year.
But I'm just like, I'm a year ahead of everybody. That's the problem.
It was like 3 years ahead.
Whatever.
You liked him when he was on the Browns and he caught like 15 passes.
He had skill.
I call him the Nando DeFino All-Stars. So you like the deep sleepers, and maybe you got a little bit ahead of yourself in doing that last year. But give me a player that you sort of you think maybe you like a little bit more than some other people.
Let's just talk about it with Matt. It's Byung-ho Park. I'm all over. I've been all over him.
We just talked about him. It's two segments in a row.
All right, then I'll give you some.
No, that's
good.
You know,
Profar. No one's on Profar. I noticed this yesterday at FBC. I'm seeing his auction values aren't. His ADP isn't where I think it should be. I really think Profar is 500 at bats. He's going to play his way to that lineup every day. And this is the number one prospect in baseball for two straight years. And everyone's just, whatever. You know, he's gonna be mitigated by all these other jokers who are taking play. Like Ryan Rua is going to take away at bats from Jerks and Profar. Not that he's a joker, but the dude's going to find 500 at bats, I think.
Well, if I could give you one word of advice, I would go after Colton and Wolfman, play some head games, and win Robbie Cano. Because that's their guy.
Yeah, it
they
is.
They didn't get him in labor, so you know Glenn wants him in the worst way.
Dump him up.
I did my fake lineup. You know, when you go through, I'm like, all right, well, this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy. And then I added up all the dollars. And it came to like 272. And I went on the high end of, you know, what I thought they would go for. And Cano was part of it. Cano's like the I forgot the name of it. what's the thing in the middle of the arch? That the keystone. Sorry.
Got it.
Cano is my keystone.
There you go.
We'll see what happens.
What do you know, Robbie?
Yeah, I mean, we started the show off really talking about Robbie Cano, cool. And George is basically saying that what is the deal that people don't really talk about Robbie Cano? We've actually added two speedsters, two guys that can run to the top of the lineup. He's got protection around him. And maybe it's just because Robbie Cano's been so consistent that people say he'll regress off of the 39 homers, but the reality is he's
regress
one of the elite hitters in baseball.
Regress to 32?
Right. 32, right. That's
I'm okay.
Fine. I'll take that.
Yeah, whatever.
He's going to drive in more runs this year than the 103 he had last year. He's going to be a great player.
You buy the 32 home runs, and the other seven are a bonus if he hits them.
I think a match league, you went for $24. In my mind,
that's a great
criminally
point.
Low.
That's a great way to phrase that. You buy the 30 homers, and anything beyond that is just a bonus.
That's great. That's what his price is right now.
How many guys hit 30 homers last year? I mean, tons hit 20, but 30, it gets you to another category, right?
We were doing it. We were with, he'll hit 25. Like, we were going through players the other night with Sheehan and Vaccaro. It was like, 25 home runs. 25 home runs. He's like, you think everyone's going to hit 25 home runs? I'm like, well, I think they are, actually. Like random dudes, like, you know, CJ Cron, 25 home runs. That's not out of the question.
That's your boy, CJ Cron.
Yeah, CJ. I wanted to get CJ Cron, but like Greg Bird went for 12. CJ Cron went for like 6.
Yeah, Bird was 15 in the auction yesterday.
Yeah, all those guys. Tommy Joseph went up.
Let's keep talking so Blewett gets nervous and we're going to go past the break here.
Pete would get nervous.
So let's talk about Jorge Soler.
I like him.
That dude's definitely on my team.
KC.
100%. Like Jorge, Soler is 100% on my
lost
team.
Lost control of the program. Hour number three on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Thank you, Nando, for stopping by. Catch him at Nando Fino on Twitter.